Let us reconvene. Trust you're all rested and fed, and courtroom will set in momentarily. So, our first item agenda, our first agenda item following lunch is a general public comment session. We have none. Excellent.
No public participation.
And following that, we have Donnell Mahan, who is our DNR's assistant division manager for Post Practice Operations, and Don Mallon with WDFW to present an overview that you have there on the agenda on Western Grace Coral Protection. This is pursuant to board request and direction of the last meeting. So please take it away, Donnell and Don.
Would you bring your mic down, please?
Yes. Thanks for the reminder.
Good afternoon, board.
I'm sorry. I thought this was a squirrel comment opportunity.
Before the petition.
Oh, gotcha. Sorry about that.
Squirrels get to know.
Just checking.
If they were here, yes.
Good afternoon. I'm Donnell Mahan, Assistant Division Manager for Operations in the Forest Practices Division. And Don Nauer is going to present first, and then we'll kind of do a little bit of a language dance here.
Good afternoon, Chair Everett and Forest Practice Board members. I'm fresh from the field, and I'm helping support the NRB staff here. And I'm speaking today in the absence of Gary Bell, who is on a personal quest to control the elk herd of the state of Washington. So bear with me. I'll answer all the questions that Gary could be answering here, and we'll see how it goes. So we're going to start with a population status report on Western Graceboro. And do I have a point here? Okay. And so you can see from the slide here, there's pretty obvious, nothing like the very complicated spotted owl slides this morning. We've got three distinct populations in green. Starting with the most robust down here in East Camanian, Klickitat County, and a smaller population in Okanagan and Chelan counties, mainly around, with a decent population around Lake Chelan. And then the last one is what we call the Puget Trough, which is basically currently a Joint Base Lewis-McChord. And I actually have some personal experience dating back as an area habitat wild over 20 years ago, where we were chasing all through the Lakewood area, looking at historical records of oak stands that had historical Western gray squirrel hits. And unfortunately, we never did find any Easterns all we found were Easterns when we followed up. And it was due to development pressures and the fact that the Easterns were there, they just had pushed them out. But it's a very small population it's still, I won't say thriving, but it's still existing. The most robust, again, being the Klickitat.
Oh, excuse me, go back to your other slide. Are you going to talk about the greater extent, the picture on the left?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Western gray squirrels are a fairly common occurrence all through Oregon. In fact, there's hunting seasons in Oregon on the little critters. Northern California, there's a lot of them. We just happen to be at the very northern extent of their range. And for a variety of reasons, whether it's climate, whether it's habitat conditions, we really don't know, mass production. But obviously the farther north, in fact, there used to be historical populations that reported up in the San Juans. And they were quite, through the Puget Trough, there were records all through, but we're losing them. And whether it's development or whether it is climate, we don't know what it is. But there's very healthy populations through Oregon, Northern California. And these three areas that we have today are what we call the primary population areas and the recovery areas that were identified in the 2007 recovery plan for the Western Gray Squirrel. So it's pretty much what we're dealing with today. We know that we expect there's going to be, these areas will change slightly in expansion, but we don't know exactly how many more squirrels we're going to end up with. We're getting some numbers in the next slide. So again, the most robust population is that Klickitat one, and these are estimates from the 2007 population estimate, which was a very intensive research endeavor. Lots of hours, very labor intensive, surveying suitable habitat and just coming up with numbers based on some Landsat, some aerial imagery. And you can see that North Cascades is a little smaller population. And then at Puget Trough, only 42 of them was the estimate at the time. And that's now been bolstered with some recent translocations or transplants. Some of those transplants I was reading were actually from Oregon, as well as the robust, more robust Klickitat County population. So we have our current research is continuing to inform us of better information on range size, population, demographics. There's still a lot we don't know about it. The really biggest problem is that last estimate was in 2007, and the problem is the population estimates are so staff intensive, it just takes so much time and effort to really improve or update that population size. So we really don't know what the population is doing now. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to follow up on some of the forest practice apps that have been acted on, have been harvested, and management plans. We just haven't been able to go back and see how the squirrels have responded post-harvest. Like I mentioned earlier, the distribution is probably a little larger than what these maps show, but we really don't know what that's going to mean eventually in as far as an overall population. So the current screening and review process is, and continues to be pretty much the same. And Donnell will get into it a little bit, the changes in a minute. But basically, we get an FPA, and these things are FPA by FPA. DNR typically notifies us through the FPRAT, and that part of that process is being changed. But we get a notification from DNR that there is a potential Western Gray Squirrel hit. Sometimes the DNR regions notify us directly. Sometimes it comes through FPRAT, and sometimes the landowner, that's not on here, but sometimes the landowner actually notifies us ahead of time, some of the cooperating landowners. At which time we would contact the landowner. We would be our area miles. Would contact the landowner. Try to find out if there's anybody available to do a study, a survey. If there isn't, our staff would conduct our own survey of the forest practice. And then we would, if squirrel nests were identified and individuals were observed, we would then work in cooperation with the landowner to negotiate a protection plan. And then that plan would then be attached eventually to the forest practice, I guess. Is that the way it's been?
That's the way it will be.
Okay, that's the way it will be. And at any rate, this is the process really hasn't changed except for some details that Pennell will share with us. The one thing I can say is cooperation has been really, really high. Talking to the area biologists that have worked on these things, it really depends on the small landowners on market conditions or what their what their business plan is or what they expect to get out of it. But most of these are scattered stands of oak and pine and fir, and they've got some room to play, and they're willing to do it. Again, in most cases. The large forest landowners have stepped up in a lot of cases and actually do their own surveying ahead of time and have already built in our priority habitats and species recommendations, protecting nest areas and clusters, individual nests, and they're really doing a pretty good job. So the cooperative level is very high. We have come up with some new guidance we're working on. It's in its final, final stages, I guess I could say. We're trying to improve within this thing. We've standardized a lot of things, including survey methodology, reporting, negotiation strategy with small landowners in order to improve that voluntary protective component of the management plans themselves. So we've improved with this new guidance document. We've improved considerably, I think, or will improve guidance for staff in dealing with the processing of the FPAs in conjunction with DNR, with the better notification system, quicker identification of the landowner that there's an issue, which will give us more time to develop a management plan on site. The survey protocols, I said, have been standardized so that we can provide a lot more consistent response to landowners, and the plans become more effective and more consistent as well. And we're applying the PHS concepts that we've had, that's priority habitat species management and protection recommendations. They're embedded in this thing, and also the basis for the squirrel management. So anyway, the consistency and more effective treatment of these things, we think, is going to improve an already positive situation with the cooperating landowners. And here's some comments from, or here's some contacts, excuse me, for the web page for more information. We will be getting our new management recommendations out soon. I can't say when, but they'll be coming out soon. So.
Mark's staff memo to the board on this subject notes that the department went back and looked at FPAs potentially involving Western Gray Squirrel occurrence or habitat. There are 263 of those from January 1st, 2007 through October 16th of this year. And one of the things the board was interested in at the last meeting was the degree of landowner participation in those voluntary planning opportunities. So, Don, is it your opinion, of the 263, I'm assuming there's some component that you get a ping in the database and you go out and find that there isn't actually habitat there, or there aren't actually nest trees there. And do you have a sense of, is that a lot of the 263, or is that not very much of the 263, or just a qualitative?
We tried to answer that question the best we could, and there was so much scatter with historical data, basically what data was used that went into identifying those habitat, those trigger areas that an FPA would trigger, let's call it that, and the fact that there's trigger distance that's somewhat, usually about a quarter mile away, but there's two or three different data sets that sounds like were juggled, and we don't really know what those numbers mean in terms of habitat plans, acreage covered, or landowners concerned. So if that's something the board really needs us to help answer, when Gary gets back, we can dive into that and get it to you.
I guess maybe come around to the question a little different direction. Are you, in the cases, however many of those within the 263, that it turns out that the hit is an affirmative hit, and we go and find that there's a nest tree or habitat on site, characterized their response to small forest landowners and large forest landowners as being generally positive and receptive to that. Are there examples that stand out in your mind where someone just slammed the door on you and said, heck no, I don't want to talk about a Western gray squirrel?
Yeah, I don't have any direct experience because I haven't been dealing with them, but I've talked to several of our field biologists, our area habitat biologists, and while that has happened, generally they're fairly receptive. Again, it depends on how much they're trying to extract from their harvest, and anything that's going to reduce that value, they're going to be a little hesitant. But most of them, market conditions until recently have been low enough that they were willing to work with us. So,
is that mostly a small forest landowner issue or a large forest landowner issue?
Well, part of the problem we have with tracking too is it's not all forest practice. We've got management plans going out for developments, which include, of course, some timber harvest because that's where the squirrels are, and so that's what makes tracking really hard. And some of those are really small. Some of those are backyard issues, as you can imagine. Somebody wants to build a garage and they've got a squirrel nest where they want to put the garage, all the way up to 700-800 acre salvage units on charred timber. So there really is a lot of scattered. And I guess it'd be interesting to me exactly what this question was about that the board put forward. Is it trying to understand the magnitude of the problem or the percentage of a squirrel hits versus what the system was tracking? And we're not sure exactly what the question was.
Yeah, well, for the folks that were part of the last meeting's discussion on it, I mean, you put forward a voluntary management planning approach, and you want to be able to get your arms around whether, in fact, people are enrolling and participating, and if so, at what rate. And the hits in the database are one thing, but recognizing, as you pointed out, that the data comes from multiple different sources, and how many of those are actually turn out to be a sort of a going concern from the standpoint of nest trees or habitat protection. So it's trying to get our arms around, is the approach appropriately suited to the species itself and to the board's obligations? That's the nature of the question, unless somebody else wants to jump in.
Yeah, it seems to be working. With the limited staff that we have, obviously it's putting a lot of pressure on them. These things, like anything, they come in droves, right? And feast and famine. but it seems to be working, and there is a high level of cooperation. I'm hearing that from everybody, so that's all I can say about it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a really blunt way to put the question is, in the absence of a requirement to do a plan that involves some sort of nest site and habitat protection, you know, are there enough instances of nest tree and supporting habitat loss to be of concern? And that's, I mean, if you've got a voluntary program, you want to know the voluntary program is protecting an appropriate proportion of the habitat and the population to make sure that it doesn't slip below some critical level. And if the answer is to that question is yes, and we very rarely lose sites and important habitat, then that's great. If the answer is, gosh, our systems don't really allow us to answer that question, then that causes a little concern. Or if it's, you know, we know of enough instances where landowners, like Aaron asked, you know, slam the door and we don't even have a chance to do anything, then I think that would provide a different context for how we look at the questions in front of us.
Right. I wish I could give you a percentage. I can't. And I guess I'm always worried even as much as the other situation where we don't know the nests and the critters we're losing.
Right.
We can never answer that, whether it's owls or anything, and we can never answer those questions of what have we lost. But tracking the responses is one thing, but tracking the losses is a whole other one. But we're confident, we are confident, I guess, that the cooperative method is working today. We're trying to expand it to more landscape type venue. That'll be harder to negotiate, but that we feel that that's going to be more effective, and that's part of an element of the new the guidelines we've developed. So I haven't answered your question, but.
Well, so your slide made a distinction between small forest landowner participation and large forest landowner participation. Is there anything of note from the conversations with large forest landowners on these issues?
I haven't had any. I can just go by what Gary relayed to me earlier, but he did say that he was happy with the large landowner responses as well, because they were proactively surveying on their own, most of them, surveying on their own and provided, incorporating our PHS protection and management recommendations within their harvest units. So the individual nests and or clusters were getting upfront protection, which we find, you know, very encouraging and very helpful, quite frankly, with our limited staff.
From your memo from this morning, or I guess it's from Martin's memo this morning, that's an example excerpt from a plan in the back, so the board members have an idea of what the content of those tends to be. It's sort of I imagine the plans are a little bit lengthier than this, but this is sort of the operative details from an example landowner plan, in this case with Hancock, Paul Hancock.
Yeah, the plans are amazingly similar to that. In fact, I mean, that's pretty much what they are. It's protecting the individual trees, trying to identify clusters and providing a buffer around those, and the disturbance issues, try to minimize any, there's a disturbance distance there during the breeding season. And what we're trying to get more is connective corridors to try to connect the tree, the arboreal habitat together, so they've got the ability to tie in from place to place. But I mean, these are real live plans, and they you know, amazingly similar, but again, those are site specific, unit specific. We'd like to get to a more landscape approach.
What's envisioned in a landscape approach? I mean, can you tell me about kind of transition from where you're at right now to a land? I mean, what are we talking about?
The way it's at least anticipated at this point is we've identified primary habitat and secondary habitat, and then connective corridors. And if we could get into a real landscape approach, whether primary habitat did or didn't have, wasn't supporting squirrel nests at this point in time, we would hope that some of that could be protected and managed, and then have some connection to that, to other primary habitat, and then on a larger scale also have secondary habitat that would be able to support that. So the tougher sell there is, if it doesn't have squirrels, you can't point out a nest, is a landowner going to be willing to protect something that's high quality habitat? So similar to spotted owls, isn't it?
I don't want to drop too many similarities. Any other questions for Don before we kind of transition into Donnell's part of the presentation? No more withering questions from the chair. Sorry about that.
Okay, I'm going to do a little bit of a recap. So what Aaron said, 263 FPAs from January 1, 2007 to October 16, 2013. That involved about 180 landowners and 34,850 acres of habitat. There are some side notes, and if you have this in your memo from Mark, I'm going to recap some of this. The FPA count is approved FPAs only, did not include renewals or FPAs that were disapproved or withdrawn. Two of the data sources that we use is WDFW is a current habitat database, and we filtered out records that were older than 1987, had imprecise locations, and sites known to be no longer in existence. The habitat layer is also based on orthophoto interpretation and some ground truthing. And the habitat layer has not been updated since 1993. So we believe the number of FPAs is likely an overestimate of applications. We were only able to use old Western Gray Squirrel data layers, and we were unable through GIS analysis to determine what proportion of these sites were determined by WDFW to actually have an impact on prairie squirrel habitat. So we need more field visits and more recent orthos to make sure to capture that DNR and WDFW did engage in quite a few meetings, some face-to-face meetings, emails, phone calls, to come together per the board's request in May to work together and come up with a collaborative method to make sure that we're capturing and making sure that we're looking at those FPAs and notifying WDFW. What we have incorporated is noting the presence of the habitat on DNR's FPA office checklist, which becomes part of the FPA. So any of you that have looked at FPAs online on FPARs, you'll see that checklist that will start capturing that data. This will also help provide notification on all new FPAs sent out for review to the Forest Practices Foresters and WDFW Habitat Bios that habitat may be present within the proposed FPA. We're also including a note on the FPA Notice of Decision page acknowledging the presence of the squirrels, habitat, or that it's in the vicinity of a harvest unit, so that it will provide a trigger for WDFW and also for our own staff to know that we need to start engaging with each other. This note is not a condition of the application. It's for information purposes only, to inform the applicant of the possible presence of gray squirrel or their habitat and provide them with a WDFW contact to improve communication and increase the likelihood of voluntary compliance. This is something that's been in place for a while, but the last two pieces of noting presence and also including that note to the landowner, we're hoping those two combined will be a lot more effective, and at least they'll have a contact number. Gary Bell's name is on there. Plus they'll have region office staff from Forest Practices if they have questions regarding what is this note, what does this mean. We can start walking through them through that, and again, provide Gary's information to make sure that we're providing that liaison opportunity.
So in other words, the way it works right now is that the WDFW bios have a profile in Forest Practices Application Review System, FPARs. When an application comes up that has a potential ping, then that person is notified. But before contemplating this addition to the application process, there wasn't an affirmative notification to the applicant. And there wasn't an active message that went out to the WDFW person with the profile. Is that the change?
Well, they are notified on every FPA by their profile of what is in Western Gray Squirrel Habitat. So for Gary, that would pop up in his profile. He has numerous profiles to try to make sure that he's capturing all those things. So there are other instances where there's a phone call, but this is one instance.